KHOI Story City ending.
Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with neighbor Pat Schlerbaum, and engineering this morning's program is station manager Mike Murphy.
Today's morning sunshine, which is currently at 60 degrees, will be followed by cloudy skies for the afternoon hours. Light rain showers are possible with a high of 79 degrees. Evening thunderstorms accompany light and variable winds with a low of 59. So take the opportunity to vote early in today's June primary before those rain showers move in.
Thank you, Pat. And we have now joining us from the Story County Board of Health, Dr. Molly Lee. Good morning, Molly.
Good morning, Mike.
Well, it's been kind of a pleasant time out there. Folks are starting to get outdoors. Before we talk maybe a little bit about seasonal things to think about, how about if we get a little update on our COVID situation?
Sure. So similar to last month and the last couple, we're still at a low COVID-19 community level here in Story County. And that just means that the levels of COVID-19 hospitalizations, cases, and patients in hospital beds aren't a strain for the local health system. So that's good news. Cases are up a little bit from when we talked last month, but still considered low. And just a small creep again in vaccination of our eligible population, about 66.5% vaccinated and almost 60% of those with one booster.
Okay. So we're apparently in fair shape for folks getting their boosters. I know that for some folks, they've already gotten a second booster. Do you have any numbers on that?
I don't right in front of me for the second booster. The eligible population that is able to get that second booster has been able to for a little while now, and I definitely encourage folks to do that. And so any additional booster that you're eligible for will just help protect you and help with that level of prevention.
Okay. And how about the younger population, the younger among us? It looks like they're eligible now. Do you have anything to share on that regard?
Yeah. So we did have some great news that those younger kids that we've been waiting for a while for them to be get those vaccines are eligible. And so they would follow a similar protocol as we all did when we first got our vaccines. And so if they're able to jump into their doctor's appointment, their pediatricians or pharmacies, they're eligible to get a vaccine now too.
Well, that's great. Yeah, and this is probably a good time actually for those youngsters to get that. So if, you know, they were feeling a little off, they'd have time to recover. It wouldn't affect school. It might cause them to look outside through the window for a couple hours, but other than that, this is probably an okay time of year for them to be going through the regime.
It is, yep. And those side effects for the younger kids remain pretty minimal again. And so, definitely worth getting protected for summer camps later in the year or back to school in the fall and getting that protection up.
Good. What have you got for the influenza report? That season should be pretty well wrapping up, I would think.
It is. I actually don't have much to report for influenza. The influenza-like illness remains below baseline, and it's kind of that time of year when the Iowa Department of Public Health stops reporting their weekly influenza cases that ended a couple weeks ago. So really, that season has wound down with the nicer weather and moving into summer, and so not too much of a concern here.
Yeah, that's great. I would speculate that with some of the precautions, we've discussed this in past programs, some of the precautions we've been taking toward COVID, that's probably kept those numbers down. Would you speculate the same or have a different idea?
Yeah. Nope, I definitely agree. Stay home when you're sick, wash your hands, anything that improves your ventilation, getting outside, and Even wearing a mask in public areas, that's going to prevent that spread of any respiratory type disease.
Yeah, okay. Also, along respiratory disease areas, we had avian influenza was in the news quite a bit. It seems to be waning with the migration pretty much past us now as far as the waterfowl. Do you have anything, any comments you'd like to share on where we're at with avian influenza?
Yeah, the avian influenza, particularly the risk to birds now, so moving away from the humans, you know, we were worried about it in our poultry populations. Iowa is a very heavy poultry producing state. And so we did have a lot of birds affected earlier this spring, but you're absolutely right. Now that those waterfowl, their migration has decreased, I'm hearing less and less of them honking, flying over my head. And that's good news for our birds here in Iowa. So we haven't had an outbreak in a commercial farm in quite some time. We have a few straggling cases that have popped up over the last few weeks, but definitely getting better in terms of that as well, and hopefully soon we'll be out of the woods.
I know there was a concern with folks that had their bird feeders and were concerned that they were potentially a spreader of that, but it was found out that, or determined that, that wasn't really an issue unless you were, maybe you had a pond and you were feeding ducks as they came in, or even geese, but that turned out not to be a big issue. And of course, this is the time of year when, as people are looking at and repairing their feeder stations, they're cleaning up around it, which is a good thing to be doing a couple times a year anyway, especially now that we're having moisture and heat. We don't want the fungus and things like that to build up. So people need to take, they need to practice good hygiene when they're feeding the birds too.
Exactly. Yep. Hygiene practices, cleanliness, separation between, you know, caretaking of your domestic birds versus wild birds, all these things will help. And any kind of disease, not necessarily avian influenza, can spread through those routes. So these are just good practices to abide by all year long, even not in the face of an outbreak.
Pat's got a question for you, Molly.
Yes, Dr. Lee, the advisable percentage of Clorox to water when you want to sanitize your bird feeding area, what do you recommend?
Oh, you're testing my memory here. I would have to look that up, but that's very easy to do. You know, we actually, where I work, the Center for Food Security and Public Health at the vet school, we have a great resource on cleaning and disinfection for different different diseases and what you're worried about preventing. So, yeah, it's very, very easy to just mix that up and disinfect. Nothing special needed. Just kind of bleach and water is a very good disinfectant.
Yeah, I get by with 10%, but I was curious if you recommended that or maybe a stronger dilution. But no, but thank you.
10% is great. Yep.
Yeah, there is a caution out there that chlorine bleach will etch away at stainless steel things, so you want to be, you know, if you are going to use it, get it off right away with a clean rinse. So. That's from experience when I was working at the lab, too. We had to watch that for some of our equipment. So, I can't help but say it's a jungle out there, so I want to ask you about monkeypox. that's bad. That's been in the news quite a bit. There haven't been a lot of cases in the United States, but we're finding out that folks may actually have it almost like a subclinical or very little symptoms, which I believe blistering is one of the symptoms. What should we be thinking about? Should we be concerned about monkeypox and its has its effect here in this past year?
Yeah, so monkeypox obviously has been we're all being made more aware of it than we ever knew we would be. And so it's been in the news, and we do have now over 1,000 cases globally of this virus, which normally is very rare and limited to kind of Central and West African countries. But this recent outbreak and the spread to North America, Europe, Australia, we have 30 cases in the U.S., no cases in Iowa yet. But really, I would kind of tread that line, not quite concern yet for our average citizen, but awareness and caution. So we potentially have some concern with community spread, meaning we have some cases and people who haven't traveled. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of an awareness, particularly of our healthcare practitioners for patients who may have some of those signs consistent with monkeypox. You're right, those kind of lesions, rashes, and sometimes fever, headaches, muscle aches, things like that that can't otherwise be explained, to kind of have monkeypox on their radar and make sure that they consult with public health and get individuals tested for that if needed.
Sounds like a great precaution. It's one of those things that if you notice something different and unusual in your health, you should get it checked out anyway. Get to your primary physician or medical caretaker, and don't be afraid to bring that up, because if you act quickly, you can usually resolve the problems before they get too integral or elaborate. Let's put it that way.
Exactly. Yeah. And kind of like for, you know, what we've been talking about with COVID and influenza, avoiding contact with sick people, you know, including sick and dead animals, that's another prevention measure that you can take to not only help potentially avoid monkeypox, but a variety of other things as well.
Okay. Well, I've got one more question, another thing that has been in the news, and that has to do with firearms and the abuse out there. Does the Board of Health for Story County, do you track those statistics within the county? I assume within the state, you probably have keep your eye open for that. Would you be able to comment on that, Molly?
Yeah, so you know, Mike, I have to speak from the perspective of a public health professional right now, and not on behalf of the Story County or the Board of Health. We haven't yet discussed this issue as a board.
Correct.
And I'm not particularly aware of any specific data that we have right now related to firearm violence. But I did want to say that, you know, gun violence is a public health issue. And so we can reduce gun violence by treating it like a public health issue. So you know, clearly firearm violence increases risk of homicide, suicide, and accidental injuries as well. One particular at-risk group being children. So apart from policy decisions made at state or local levels, there's a variety of steps that could reduce firearm violence, including investing in data surveillance, safe storage, so education and providing safe places to store and lock up guns, education about leakage, in other words, when mass shooters may kind of leak their plans through telling friends or family or through social media, and then finally, of course, funding to kind of explore these interventions and others and find solutions.
Well, that sounds like practical things to be aware of anyway. Coming from the, and this is my opinion as well, I'm a hunter safety educator, and safety is the primary reason why I became an instructor. And you mentioned it, safe storage, safe handling, and education and respect. I mean, we all have rights, but we also have to respect our rights and others. So thank you for that, Molly. Is there anything else you'd like to say as we close out? We're going to have to break and do a little in-house business so we can stay on the air. But any last comments, Molly?
Yeah, just the last two comments I have is we do have our regular Board of Health meeting today at 2 p.m. So the public can listen in via Zoom or attend the meeting at the Story County Administration Building. And then just related to that item you mentioned, I definitely encourage listeners to support this radio station. I have gained a lot from it and appreciate their contribution to our community. So definitely please support KHOI FM 89.1.
Well, Dr. Lee, our program couldn't be as well produced and put out the information if it wasn't for you being willing to be a representative of our County Board of Health. That adds to our community, shared community, and keeping us together as a community. So sure appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that you are willing to take time to visit with us monthly. And sure hope that we'll see you again next month about the same time of the month.
All right, absolutely. I appreciate it. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you for sharing, Dr. Molly Lee. And it's probably a good point to bring up having people of her stature on Local Talk is probably what's really strengthening this program. And her contributions from a professional standpoint are just unparalleled. It's just fabulous.
Well, think about it, Pat. How do folks normally get our local, keep in touch with our local authorities, our boards, mm-hmm. The experts out there in the field that are able to share, take time to share, mm-hmm. and they're able to do that through KHOI. We're community, and that's what we're trying to do here.
And we're digitally enhanced with the ability to encourage people to go to our website, khoifm.org, find that donate button, look through the archives, realize what a service that KHOI is providing the people of Ames. I wonder, even a couple years ago, you know, with COVID and kind of ramping up our Local Talk outreach to not only the countywide offices, but particularly right here in Ames, where we were getting the type of information that people like Dr. Molly Lee shares 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, you know? It probably wasn't. It wasn't on a local station, per se.
Yeah.
Unless it was at breaking headline news because of a disaster or something, you wouldn't hear about what's actually going on.
I like the day-to-day aspect of including people like Dr. Molly Lee once a month, and we just kind of cycle through these great voices. And we've got a goal of 50 new members. So if you are becoming familiar with KHOI at 89.1 FM on the FM dial, or it does seem that the outreach with the electronic signaling with khoifm.org by going to that website, it seems to be a very practical way to keep up with what's going on.
And you know, our community isn't just within the 40-mile radius of our broadcast range. You can stream on khoifm.org and listen to either Local Talk, for example, as it's being broadcast, or some of the other programs. You were mentioning annual membership. What are we asking our listeners to contribute to become an annual member?
The basic membership is $60 per year. So what's that figure out to, like 16 cents
a day?
So what a bargain. But once you have that, you've made that initial contribution or initial investment, or the responsibility of realizing if these programs mean anything to you, if we could just encourage you to become a member and contribute, it's what keeps the lights on, and we're volunteers here. So it's just great to have our station manager, interim status, Mike Murphy, and Eric Blocker, you know, keeping the train's running on time, if you will.
And don't forget Jim.
Well, absolutely, Jim Popkin, but I think he's volunteering all his contributions.
Sure.
So, yeah, Jim Popkin, wow, where would we have been trying to make this transition? So we're still just kind of finding our way with transitioning from 410 Douglas down here to 622. But this is the opportunity and the time for a listener to go to that website, khoifm.org, and press the donate button and learn how to further become a member.
Well, thanks, Pat. And we're going to take just a quick music break here. Going to have a little stroll through our parks and recreational areas to get downtown to visit with Susan Guiazda. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to see you. I was on the road yesterday for quite a while, so it's kind of nice to be here where I don't have to be paying attention to everything in front of me right now other than Pat and Mike. Susan, what have we got as far as the city concerns today?
Well, I actually have been off as well, so it's great to be back in Ames, and a lot is going on as usual. Bandshell concerts with the Ames Municipal Band kicked off last week, Thursday, with Council Night at the Bandshell, and it was a lovely evening. Those, again, will continue this Thursday. They start at 8 p.m. Really exciting to see those LED lights sort of dance with the band music. It's a really nice evening. The concert usually lasts about an hour, so from 8 to 9 p.m. And looking forward to that throughout the months of June and July. Band show concerts are also in the realm of Ames Parks and Recreation. And so I wanted to bring with us Ames Park Recreation is a department that is busy year-round. But I think at this point in the season, they are particularly busy. Kids are out of school, and people are really interested in outdoor recreation. So I brought with us our Parks and Recreation Director, Keith Abraham.
Well, good morning, Keith. Welcome.
Good morning. How are you today?
Oh, I'm a little tired, but you pretty much know why. But I was wondering, I was a little wrapped up in some things Thursday evening. Susan, I actually had it on my list to come down and get my ice cream and light bulb, but I was a little predisposed, and so I assume Keith probably ate my ice cream, but anyway.
one of everything, Mike.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, it's been a while since I've visited with you, Keith. How are things in the park and rec world?
Well, like Susan said, it's a busy time of the year, and we have a lot of things going on this week. A lot of programs starting, swim lessons out at Furman, mornings and evenings. We have camp starting up next week, gymnastics, t-ball, just a variety of programs. And it's also, you know, obviously with this kind of weather, we're trying to get as much done as we can within the park system, trying to get projects. We got the mowing, the trimming, and just a lot of things happening.
Yeah, did the rains slow things down a little bit, or do you suspect there'll be some areas you won't quite get to mow today?
You know, usually if it's not raining, and even we mow sometimes in the rain, as long as it's not a downpour or lightning. So I'm going to guess that there might be some areas if there's a little water standing or is a little sloppy, we won't be able to get to. But for the most part, we just keep plugging along.
You mentioned lessons at the Furman Aquatic Center, and I know one of the concerns that we visited with Courtney about last week was staffing. Are there still folks applying and trying to fill those positions?
Yes. Yep. Courtney has been doing a lot of interviews, and she had a couple more interviews yesterday. And once we're getting people hired, then we need to get them trained. You know, we do have, I believe, 10 people in a class coming up this weekend. And once we get them certified as a lifeguard, then we can start plugging them into the schedule. But things have been going fairly well. You know, this week we did, I think we, with our calendar, we were able to open all of the hours that we normally do.
Okay.
I think Sunday is a little iffy on some of the 11 to 1 time slots, but we've been able to get people working and opening up the facility for the community, which mm-hmm. I think is greatly appreciated.
That sounds
it's been a tough road, but we're getting there.
Well, yeah, hopefully if we can get some folks that'll step up, that'll provide times for more folks to be able to enjoy the facilities. I'd like to kind of splash around and wade into a couple of other water related items. What can you tell us?
Very, very nice, Mike.
Oh, I just flow with it, Keith, you know. I don't want to make any waves though. So what have you got in some of those other activities?
So we have seen as you were talking a lot of water. You know, Brookside Wading Pool, we did open that at the end of last week.
Yeah.
So that's open. I believe the hours are from 11 to 4, you know, every day. That's at Brookside Park. If people aren't familiar with it, it's a great place to take little ones. It's shaded, not a lot of sun, but 12 to 18 inches of water, be able to splash around and cool off. So that is open now. And then we're working on the design for the splash pad out at Daly Park. And right now, with some of the things that have been going on, we're hoping to maybe do some construction yet this year. But right now we're looking at, we will put that out to bid in the fall and try to get on people's schedules for next year. Hopefully right away when the spring allows for construction to begin, we can start that project and open that sometime in 2023. So.
Okay. Well, just staying with the water park theme, let's go out to Ada Hayden for a minute and talk about access for boaters. I actually haven't been on that end of the park. I've been on the south and southwestern end here recently, and I haven't been up to see if where you're at with that aid that you were going to install.
Yeah, so an accessible canoe and kayak launch with it. So we have the launch, the chute, the dock, all of that stuff is built. It's ready to be shipped. The issue that we had, Mike, was finding a contractor to do the concrete work. So basically the path from the parking lot, and then there's a bulkhead that needs to the dock or the chute and the gangway attached to. So we have about $16,000-$17,000 left to do this work, which is what the engineer's estimate was. When we started talking to contractors, one estimate came back at $85,000. And so what we've done, we've gotten some feedback from the contractors, and we went back to Snyder Associates, redesigned the bulkhead, and we should be getting those final designs. We're supposed to maybe get them yesterday. Hopefully we'll get them today, and then we'll go out and start talking to contractors. We think this really simplifies the project, and we're still hoping to get this done this month. Is what our goal is.
Well, that's good and bad news, I guess, but it's best to do it right the first time and get everything set up. So I'm glad you're on it, Keith.
Yeah, Yeah, and it's what everybody is facing, supply issues, labor shortages, sure. All those types of things. we just had put out a bid for painting all three basins at the Permanent Aquatic Center, and 6 years ago it cost us $94,000. We put in $150,000, and we got two bids at $296,000 and $325,000. So it's just crazy with all of our projects and construction. So we've had to delay some things and kind of redesign and try to get those costs down. So,
well, I do have an idea for you as far as painting. Why don't you get some water-based paint and just pour it in? I'll do that for a couple of bucks. Oh, that might not work. It wouldn't go where you wanted it to.
Yeah. We're always open for ideas.
Well, you can scratch that one off. Keith, we've got a little project going on as far as the downtown plaza. Can you give us an update on that?
Yes. Yeah. So with that one, that was another project where bids came in, almost a million over what we had budgeted, but we've done some value engineering with Henkel Construction, who has been awarded the contract, got it down to about $750,000, and City Council did approve that contract, and hopefully they'll be getting started sometime soon. We're waiting until the parking lot north of 6th Street was done before we rip up the parking lot across from City Hall. So Henkel may start on the Clark Avenue improvements. They're going to be adding some parking right in front of City Hall, some angle parking on the west side of the street. They might start with that. And then, hopefully in the next month, you'll see some construction demo starting happening with the plaza. Construction will continue, through the fall, winter, spring. And really the plaza won't be open until most likely next spring.
Okay.
And the water feature will be open, sometime probably late May, early June. The ice component, we are looking to have that tested maybe in February or March, but we are not looking to open it to the public at that time because not everything else will be done. But the ice ribbon will be operational for the probably November of 23.
Great. Okay.
Is how we'll look at. So exciting project. Really a lot of great features. Be a great amenity for the downtown area, and really hopefully brings people in, and it'll be a great addition.
Well, that seems like a ways away, but actually that is not. That's just next year we're talking about. And time flies when we're all having fun.
you got it right. It seems like we're just celebrating New Year's, and now we're coming up on the 4th of July already.
Well, so. Keith, I'm usually done celebrating New Year's the day after. I don't know about you. Are you just wrapping yours up? Keith, we've got just a little bit of time left. Do you have anything else you'd like to share, like a favorite spot you like to go to get away from puns?
not to get away from fun, but to have fun. At this time of the year, I think we've talked about this before, I love anything outdoors, and one of the things that I really enjoy doing is fishing. And a lot of times I'll go by myself because just with a lot of things, unlike the two of you taking time off this past weekend, I was working. What I like to do is go fishing, and it kind of just clears my mind and gets me ready for another week. But I actually like to go up to Ada Hayden if we're talking one of our parks. Like to go up there, fish for bass, really don't run into a lot of other fishermen, which is kind of nice. And it's such a beautiful park, and I usually go at night. So I not only fish, but I also get to see some awesome sunsets. Which is great. And Susan has seen some of those sunset pictures that I've taken up at Ada Hayden. And it's just very peaceful, and it's a way for me to clear the mind.
So what we'll tell our listeners is, if you see a guy dressed in black, don't in a straw hat, and probably a little cigar smoke to keep the mosquitoes away, don't bother him, because he's trying to have some of his own time.
Yeah. And just to reiterate to people that our parks are tobacco free.
Yes.
So. So no cigar smoke, and I did hear that there was a swarm of mosquitoes following you back from Wisconsin.
Yes, there was. They were having their way with me when I was mowing my uncle's lawn. If you stopped that mower and you didn't have your head net, I was asked talking to Molly about monkeypox earlier in the program of Board of Health, and no, it's you want to avoid those critters, that's for sure. You know, some of them are so big up there. I saw two fishermen get in one thinking it was a bush plane. And with that, Keith, I appreciate your...
You guys are on a roll this morning.
I paid him to laugh, Susan. Do you have anything, Susan, do you have anything to add before we close? Or Keith, I didn't mean to cut.
Well, just a quick reminder that city council meetings this month are June 14th and 28th. It's a little later. It's not every other week, which people think. It's the second and fourth Tuesdays of the month. So the 14th and the 28th will be a regularly scheduled AIM city council meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, one thing I would add, Mike, is one of the things that we have done over the years, we've partnered with the Friends of Ada Hayden Heritage Park to hire an intern, and we hire the individual, the city does, and then the Friends group actually pays for it, and we have hired somebody, so you may see somebody out walking around if people are out at Ada Hayden, and they're there to help answer questions and so on, and they will also be setting up some educational sessions, So look for those types of things on the Friends website, our website, and our newsletter that we send out, and on Facebook. So there'll be some fun educational events that will be coming up as well.
Well, thank you, Keith. It was a pleasure having paid you to laugh this morning for me. And Susan,
well,
thank
you. Just so your listeners know that Mike does have this laugh sign that he turns on every so often. So
ignore it. I'm the
studio audiences. So.
Okay.
Well, and Keith, in reference to your earlier comments about the needing additional funding for your projects, it just seems to be a sign of the times, but something my pappy always used to say was, it always seems like it takes longer and costs a little more money to do things right.
Yep, very well said, man. Very well said.
Well, thanks again for joining us, Keith. Thank you, Susan, as always. And we'll see you down on one of those trails, either with dog in hand or pole on your shoulder.
Sounds
right.
Good.
Have a
All
great
right,
thanks
morning. For having us.
Thank you.
Well, how about that Friends group offering to contribute to having a staff person on hand? What a commitment to the better picture of realizing that limited funding for the city, that a Friends group can make that take on that responsibility. It's a lot like what we try to do here at KHOI.
Exactly. You know, there are other groups that help them out there too. The Ames, the paddler group.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need to do is we need to instill upon our listeners that we need their help in order to keep us on air and provide this community radio function, service. And with that, I know that you had a recent interview that we need to maybe play. You want to tell us quickly about it?
Well, the Ames reunion is coming up June 10th, 11th, and 12th. So that's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And yes, we've been targeting some of the key players in the Ames community, and it's good to have Rose Rollenhagen telling us about an establishment that was a pretty active music destination in Ames back in the 1970s of Rippey's Orchard, the bar.
Okay, let's listen.
When I first heard about Rippey's Orchard, and I came back to Ames in August of 1973, and the people that I was sharing a house with were all headed down to a bar called Rippey's Orchard, and it was closing. And I felt like I'd really missed the boat the whole time I'd away in the service, but that's another story. But maybe we can start with the bar, and how did Rippey's Orchard get its name, the bar?
Well, it came from some land down in Missouri that came to be the home of a commune. And backing up, the land had been purchased by a Colonel Rippey, and it was 260 acres, and he had bought it and planted apple trees and pear trees on it. I don't think they were ever very productive. But anyway, this piece of land acquired the name Rippey's Orchard. And so then when the bar was built in Ames, I don't know when they started it. They were finishing it up in the summer of 1972. I think the building is still there, and I believe it's now called Outlaws. It's been through various owners over the years. So they chose that name.
Yeah, so there were people from Rippey's Orchard and from the commune that were from Ames and built the bar?
Yeah, I think people who had helped build the bar and been involved in it and had the idea to form a commune.
I see.
Yeah.
So it's in northern Missouri, as I recall, south of Centerville.
Just barely over the Iowa-Missouri line, with Kirksville and a little town called Coatesville.
Coatesville.
Really right on the Iowa border, too.
So the land had a name, and people heard about the land, and I guess communes were kind of an alternative lifestyle for quite a few young people back in the day. And how many people were involved with the commune?
I think at the high point there were as many as 28 or 30 there. I don't think that number lasted very long. I think mostly there were maybe 20, 22 was the main core group that stuck around longer.
And when did it start?
Well, I think it started in 1972. I came to Ames to start at Iowa State University. I was in my first semester there, having transferred from University of Iowa. And that was in the fall of 1972. And I didn't know anyone in Ames. And I realized I needed to get out and try to meet some people. And there was this new bar that had opened up on Chamberlain and called Rippey's Orchard. And actually, I probably walked right by it on my way home to my little basement bedroom room that I was renting on Hunt Street, I believe. Anyway, one night, so I got, put on some cool clothes and my bell bottoms and walked into Rippey's Orchard. And ended up meeting a number of people that I would spend the next year and a half with, some of them longer than that, and one in particular I've been with for 50 years here.
Oh, okay. That would be your husband, Keith.
That would be Keith. And so this is a really cool building, and I understand that it has been really kind of ruined. That it was on three different levels.
I remember that.
Do you remember this, how it looked? And had the stage on the bottom level, and then the other two levels were open down to the lowest floor to the stage. So you could see the stage and the dance floor from pretty much any place in the building.
And your husband, Keith, a construction architect, was he involved with that work back then, creating that wonderful space?
In fact, he was. I think he was working on another project during most of the building of it, but he came in to do some finishing, And that's, in fact, what he was doing the night I walked into the bar. He still had, he had a tool belt on and was doing some work, I guess, on the finishing up the stage. And I remember actually sitting at a one of those little round tables and across from Keith and Jay Avellino. This is a memory that Keith gave back to me here a few years ago that I had completely forgotten the details of the night we met. And he started describing it, and as he did, it just came back to me. I could picture that. So we're talking fall of 1972. That's been 50 years ago.
Yes.
And yeah. So I finished out the school year, actually. In the meantime, people had this, you know, the commune was a big thing. And so people were moving down there to Missouri. So I finished up that first year, and then I followed Keith and the others down to the orchard, informed my parents that I was dropping out of school and moving to a commune to live with my boyfriend. And that went over like a lead balloon.
Oh, like a lead balloon. Okay, yeah, that's a term of the times back then.
Yeah.
Did you camp out, or what were the living arrangements?
We actually had three different houses, and they weren't very far apart. Well, I guess we'll call the job shack number one, which was actually on the land, on the orchard. I guess we'll call it a house. It was a one-room. It wasn't much. It was really a shack, but yeah. Usually four people living there. And then there were probably, I don't know, maybe 12 of us that were living in Z House, which was just a, less than a mile from the orchard. And it was a little one-story house that was in terrible shape. The animals had taken over, wild animals had taken over.
Oh, you'll have shovel, this, yeah.
Shovel raccoon out of the, yeah. Out of the house and to clean it up. And so it was cleaned up by the time I got down there. And then there was a third house that was actually in Coatesville, and it also had a number of people living there. I'd say 10 or 12 people living there. And that was kind of the nicest house that we had. And so when we did have a group dinner or we had a meeting or something, it would usually occur at the Coatesville.
I see. But you undoubtedly spent a lot of time on the land. What are some of your early memories of that northern Missouri property?
Well, it was wild. You know, there were no improvements on it. I mean, there was no well, there was nothing.
I see.
Yeah, there was a garden. The people who were living in the job shack had a fair-sized garden up on top of the hill. And then the second summer I was there, someone had a tractor, apparently, and we plowed up a much larger garden down at the bottom of the hill. And I think I had that garden for, or we had that garden for only 1 year. It was miserable, you know. It was down in the valley. There was no breeze down there. Mosquitoes were terrible.
Well, you are who I affectionately refer to as the flower woman at the farmers markets. Were you raising flowers back then, or how? Where did the flowers come into your life, Rose?
Well, I had a few around our house at Z House. Made a few flower beds. My main focus was vegetables, though. I mean, we were going to grow all our own food. We were out to change the world, you know.
Sure.
We were going to form our own society there, and it would not involve corporate America, and it would not involve insurance companies. And we were going to do it right, and we were going to be self-sufficient. And, you know, we had big plans. The garden was vegetables, and I have trouble remembering much what we planted there. It's the tomatoes that I remember, because I had, at Z House, I dug out a pit and made a hotbed and dug down deep and put, I can't remember, like 8 inches of fresh manure in the bottom of it, and then had a layer of something on top of it. and then put the flats directly on there. And that was a source of heat, you know, the composting manure.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I remember starting these tomato plants in these wood flats that I had made out of scrap plywood. And then we got some soil, and I remember sterilizing it, or pasteurizing it, I should say, not sterilizing it, 150 degrees in the wood stove, in the oven of the wood stove, in these flats. I had the good sense to do that, since I was just using outdoor soil.
Yeah.
And then just seeded the tomato seeds directly into these flats. And anyway, it worked, you know. I had tomato plants to set out. Yeah. So,
well,
yeah, it was a lot of growing food and canning tomatoes and so on. I mean, our living conditions were, well, especially in the job shack, they had nothing. They had no running water, nothing.
Yeah.
We had, at least at Sea House, we had no running water, but there was a pump right outside the back door.
Uh-huh.
And so we would get, you know, draw 5-gallon buckets of water and bring them in. And our only source of heat was wood. So we had the wood cook stove, and it had a 15-gallon, I believe, water reservoir.
Oh, yeah, on the right side.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So we'd keep that filled, and so we'd have warm water. And then the guys built a plywood counter, dropped an old sink into it, and then the drain pipe just ran down into a 5-gallon bucket. So you just had to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty high maintenance, but you were getting by. Well, so that kind of brings up the other focus here. Sounds like there was some construction, and your husband becoming an architect, and I know there's some other people that are pretty good with hammer and a saw. So there was some gardening, but was there also building and construction work for people at the commune?
Yes, that was the main source of income for this common pot that we had, that we kept. And, yeah, they did several. Keith was reminding me that they built 3 different houses for U.S. homes. You know, they came down there. It's a rural area. There wasn't that much building going on anyway. They needed to establish themselves some way. And so they traveled around building these homes for U.S. homes. I participated on one of them. And so they built a second job shack number 2, in sections, and would take it to the job site and erect it. And then that's where the crew would live while the house was being built.
Oh, fascinating. How many in the crew?
I think there were 8 of us at the time I remember. But I think he had maybe 6 regulars. I don't know. I remember Mary Lorenzen and I both had that experience of being with the guys in this, living in this job shack while we were building this house. And that guy actually didn't want our job shack up in his yard, and so he volunteered that we could put it up in his barn.
Oh.
So we did.
So you did.
A little more protection there.
Fascinating indeed. So when you get up in the morning, you know, you got a job to go do. That's always one thing I like about construction is you can have benchmarks, if you will. You know, you can see your progress. And so can you recall what you thought about your livelihood there in northern Missouri back in 1972 and 1973?
Well, we were just, I don't know, I guess accepted the fact that if we were going to do something, have a radically different lifestyle, that when we were trying to be in tune with the environment and live accordingly. I think we just accepted that we would have really primitive facilities and so on. I'm trying to remember how I thought what the reaction of the natives there in northern Missouri thought. I suppose I only had contact with the ones who were friendly to us, probably. Yeah. And I think probably some of them were just kind of amused at the long-haired hippies, you know,
Coming from that area, I presume as long as you work hard, and it sounds like you were a bunch of hard workers, that will heal a lot of the prejudices, or you'll be accepted if you're self-sufficient and a good worker.
Yeah, I do think that. I think that's a good point.
Well, so that kind of brings this full circle. People had quite the experience 50 years ago. How many of those principles that you adopted or you grew with back then do you still carry today?
Oh, my gosh. That had such a profound experience. That whole experience, that 3 years down there, had such a profound, really, experience on my life and the direction it's taken. You know, I formed the idea that, number one, we're all in this together. We're responsible. We have to take responsibility for each other and help each other as much as we can. And also the environmental, trying to live in harmony with our environment, because this is the only planet we have. It's had a huge effect on my life.
The only planet that we have.
Yep.
There is no planet B.
There is no planet B.
These are just nice touchstones. And since you were there and you and Keith contribute so much to the Ames community now, I couldn't help but wonder that I'd hear you say that, oh, yeah, if it was important then, it's still important now.
Still important.
Yeah.
Still important. Yeah, really.
I don't know of many other communities that look to an era and then attempt to do something like this. But again, it sure was redeeming in 2002. So I think every 20 years, this is a lot to look forward to.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Pat. Rose, thank you so much. Yeah. Love you and Keith.
I love you too, Pat.
Bye.
Pat, that was a great interview.
Well, we have a lot to look forward to Friday afternoon. Meet at Mother's Pub on West Street, 2900 West Street, 7 p.m. And it'll be a good opportunity to catch up with some old friends. And if you're new to Ames and just want to be around some pretty progressive, interesting folks, Friday evening, the 10th, 11th, and 12th, and there was Keith Wessel talking about Natural Smiles. KHOI will be there. I'll be recording people. If you have a story, we'll have some natural audio. It's just a natural sense of things to contribute not only to the Ames reunion, but to and strengthening the Ames community like KHOI does. Go to that website, khoifm.org. And start your membership pledge. It's $60 a year. Make sure that you have the opportunity to embrace all the good things that KHOI can assist the citizens of Ames.
Yeah, 16 cents a day. That's what it is for a basic membership. Mm-hmm. And Pat, I'm aware that you, like me and many others here, volunteers, we're sustaining members. And we contribute on a basis where it's taken out of one of our accounts on a monthly or however we decide to set it up. But being a sustaining member allows a couple of things. Keeps a set amount that we can budget, have a budget process, so we know about how much we have to work with on a monthly basis. And that makes you feel good knowing that you're contributing to keeping this community station on the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to have 50 new members at the completion of this membership drive. So please go to that website, khoifm.org. Thanks for another wonderful local talk, Mike Metz. All Things Piano will be on at 9 a.m. Our theme song, as always, is backtracked by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI, and see you again.
See you again on the radio.
On the radio.
On the radio. And please remember to vote.
WOI, Story City and Ames.